Well, hi there again. I thought I would just go ahead and do chapter 4 because I had such a long break since I've been doing this that I might as well get a little bit more going, right? So here we go. And here is the picture. Can you see that? June passed and the days lengthened into summer. The plague had died out, but with its going went many of the people of London, even some of the monks. Once more, the monastery kept its usual round of service to God and humanity. The monks who were left added to their own the duties of those who had died. Brother Luke sometimes helped in the preparation of food. Sometimes he carried Robin down into the kitchen, where he could be warm on a wet day. It was there that he finished the little cross. Although it is yet too soon for thee to carve figures for choir stalls or for bosses for chapel, a child's puppet could be made more easily. Why not make one of that for that poor girl child who hung to my skirts that day? She dwelleth by Houndsditch in a poor hovel where I go on my errands. A girl's plaything? Asked Robin. Then he began to think what fun it might be to carve out a face. He might even make the arms and legs so they would move. Yes, he said, I will try. So began the making of the doll for the little girl. Head and body were to be in one piece with arms and legs jointed. Brother Matthew will help thee to work that out, said Brother Luke. Soft pine again was used because it was easier to cut. And that is a little doll that he's holding. I don't know if you can see that. Robin became so excited at seeing real features emerge from the piece of wood that he could hardly bear to take time to attend to his studies. Reading went well, and he was beginning to make fair characters in writing with the quill. On clear nights, Brother Hubert took him to a high tower of the monastery to tell him of the stars. He told Robin, too, of far countries, the Holy Land where crusaders had fought for the tomb of our Lord, and of Greece and Rome, whose ancient languages were the beginnings of many other tongues. He told of Roman legions who had come to Britain centuries before, and of Saxon and Danish kings who in turn had ruled their land. Robin couldn't always remember which ones came first, but he liked to hear Brother Hubert tell about them. One day, Robin was sitting in the trundle cart finishing the child's doll when Brother Luke came into the garden. Thy hands are well used to the chisel now, he said, in praise of Robin's work. That is a face and body right enough, and I see thou art attaching the arms. Will they move then? Yes, said Robin. See how this peg fits into the shoulder, then slips into the top of the arms and it swings. See? It will make a little child very happy, said the friar. Now, because the day is so fine and thou art getting so strong, it might be well if we should go fishing. Fishing? Could he really leave the hospice and go fishing? Even the fun of fitting arms and legs to the doll could not keep Robin from wanting to get out into the fields and away from bench and bed, stool and trundle cart. I could sit against a tree and fish too, think you? No doubt, agreed Brother Luke. Come then. He lifted Robin to his back and they went down the green to the brook outside the walls. They fished for a time, each catching several trout, which they wrapped in leaves. The sun shone warm through the leafy grove. Insects droned in the noon heat, and the water slipped musically over green mossed stones. It was very still. Suddenly, the quiet was burst with the shout of boys' voices. Six or seven urchins ran over the green, stripping off clothing as they came. Robin, looking over his shoulder, saw Geoffrey Atwater, the same lad he had first seen limping through the corridors of St. Mark's. Geoffrey raced down the bank ahead of all the rest, swinging his crutches ahead of him and taking in his stride twice as much ground as the other boys. Geoffrey saw Robin at the same moment. "Hi, Crookshanks," he called. "Art finding fish for thy fasting?" Off came the last ragged garment, down went the crutches, and with a whoosh, he was into the water with the others and away with the current. Thrashing arms and legs beat the water into foam and spoiled the fishing. Robin wished with all his heart that he could go into the water and swim too. It was all very well for Brother Luke to bring him fishing, but it only seemed to make it harder that he couldn't run about or swim like the other boys. The friar saw Robin's hungry look. "Off with thy jerkin," he said, at the same time rising and taking off his own habit. "We'll give thee a good bath and cleanse thy humor. Who knows, mayhap we can teach thee to swim." He pulled off Robin's hosen and carried him into the water, holding and dipping him where the current ran deep. "Now swing thy arms about with fingers closed to push the water back." Robin pushed and felt himself moving along with Brother Luke, walking and supporting him. All the troubles of the past months seemed to float away with the running of the brook and strength and power to flow into his arms. It was wonderful. Brother Luke didn't allow him to stay long in the water, but promised to bring him every day. "For some time I have had this in mind," he said. "Now I know I was right. This will make thine arms even stronger, and soon they will help thee to get about on land as well." "How?" asked Robin. But even as he said it, he knew that Brother Luke meant crutches. That was it. With crutches, he would be able to go about as Geoffrey did. He could play at duck on a rock with the boys. He could join them in hoodman blind or hide and seek. Crutches would be almost as much fun as stilts. Then Robin remembered that his father expected him to be a knight. How could he ride horseback in chainmail with his legs, while his legs were bent and he had to use crutches? How could he face his father? How bear his mother's pitying look? How would they feel to have a son who could not fulfill his knightly duties? "I see thou hast my meaning," said the friar as he finished dressing Robin. "Crutches or crosses, as thou'lt have it, 'tis all the same thing. Remember, even thy crutches can be a door in a wall. By the time they are made, thou'lt be ready for them, God willing. Up now, and hold fast, whilst we go up the hill." And here they are. From that day forward, swimming became a part of Robin's everyday life. Besides reading, writing, and the study of history and the stars, Robin was given certain duties in the routine of the church. At the lectern, during rehearsals, he turned the pages of the Missal, a book of music notes large enough for all the brothers to see as they stood in the chantry. Each day, too, he worked with Brother Matthew in the carpentry shop. He liked the music and the carpentry better than the reading and writing, but best of all, he liked the swimming. It made him feel free and powerful. Even on cloudy or rainy days, and when the weather was quite cool, Robin was taken for his daily swim. And soon he was able to dive beneath the water and play tricks on the good friar. Once, when the boys saw Robin's little boat, they begged to be allowed to sail it too. But they were all so eager to try it that soon its rigging was broken and its pennant dragging. So Robin helped each of them make a boat of his own. Geoffrey's was made from a piece of the willow overhanging the brook. A twig stuck into a wormhole made the mast, and another twig through a leaf served for a sail. Then Dickon must have one, then Alfred, and the swimming hole became a boatyard. Sometimes they marked out squares on the sandy bank and played a game of checkers with round stones. Sometimes, on hot days, all the time was spent in the water, and the boys raced Robin to the wire and back. Once, Robin beat them all. "Crookshanks, here is as fast as any of us," Geoffrey said proudly. Then Robin felt as if he were one of them. Once, when Robin dived underwater and hid in the rushes, Brother Luke at first scolded him, for he was frightened. Then he said, "But I am glad for thy mischief, for it is a sign thou art well." Robin had another reason for knowing he was well, but he kept it secret. Work was begun on the crutches. They were to be simple, straight staves with cross pieces at the top to fit under Robin's arms. Brother Matthew had found the wood of proper kind and size, then he sawed it the right length, allowing a little for finishing. Brother Luke wheeled Robin to the shed where he could watch. When the first piece of wood was put into the vise and Brother Matthew began to draw the spoke shave down the length of it, Robin thought it time to tell his secret, for he wanted very much to have a hand in making the crutches with which he hoped to walk. "Can I shape the pieces, think you?" he asked. "Look," he directed, "I can bear my weight upon my feet, though I cannot stand long alone, nor can I straighten. But can I not lean upon the bench?" To the surprise of both brothers, Robin hitched along slowly toward Brother Matthew's workbench, where he leaned for a few moments before he found it necessary to sit down. "Now praise our Lord's mercy," said Brother Luke fervently, at the same time putting forth a high stool for Robin to sit on. "Now 'twill be thine own crutches thou wilt wear, made by thine own hands." Brother Matthew blessed himself to show how grateful he was and arranged the work so that Robin could better attend to it for himself. It was more exciting to work at a real bench, to draw the sharp knife along the clean wood, to hear it snick as the knife took hold, then slither off into shavings. The oak was very hard and took real strength to work, but swimming had given Robin good muscles in his arms so that little by little he was able to shape the staff. Several weeks went by before Robin finished the crutches, but at last they were done and he could hardly wait to try them. "There should be padding and leather on the cross pieces," said Brother Luke. "Let us go into the city to the poachmaker's guild. I have errands for the prior as well. Besides, it is Midsummer Eve. We shall see the gaiety." "Shall I walk then?" asked Robin. "For look you, I have been trying the crutches already and can go at a good pace. See you?" Robin slid off the stool, fitted the crutches under his arms, and was off across the garth all in one motion. "Softly, softly," Brother Luke advised. "'Tis a good way into the city. Even though it sounds and odors do seem to reach us here, it would be better to go pickaback and carry thy crosses most of the way. Thou'lt be glad of my old back ere we come to Ludgate, I'll be bound." It was exciting to go back into the city, especially this Midsummer Eve. The doorways were decked with branches of green birch, long fennel, and St. John's wort. Some had garlands of flowers, white lilies, and such like. Neighbor was merry with neighbor, and those who had wealth set out food and drink before their houses for all who passed by. "Can we not stay even a little while?" Robin begged. "No, my son, when we have done our errands, we shall go back." The brace girdler down Leather Lane willingly gave Robin enough leather to cover the cross pieces of the crutches and hair to stuff it. "'Tis not fit to be sold," he said, "being poorly dyed, but 'twill serve thy purpose." They were not far from Robin's home, but he had no wish to see it empty and deserted. How he wished it had been open and his father and mother there. And that, my friends, was the end of chapter 4. Thank you for watching. Be sure to subscribe and tell your friends, and we'll keep on going. Bye.